Like, can you just for once tell me clearly what's right, what's wrong? Is it okay to be gay? Is it not okay to be gay? Is it okay to be non-monogamous? Is it not? Can you just point me somewhere so that it's clear so I don't have to think about it and worry about it? And there's just so few avenues of life that actually give us clarity about anything, unfortunately.
If you're happy with the same old ways of dating,
if you enjoy sucking at communication,
and you have no desire to improve your romantic life, then our podcast might not be for you.
But if you want some out-of-the-box ideas to deepen your current relationships,
broaden your sexual horizons,
develop a better understanding of yourself,
or learn more about non-monogamy,
then you've come to the right place. I'm Jace.
I'm Emily.
And I'm Dedeker.
And this is the Multiamory Podcast. On this episode of the Multiamory Podcast, we're going to be asking the hard questions about how to reconcile being queer or non-monogamous or really anything non-mainstream with the Judeo-Christian values that are such a part of Western upbringing. Whether Christianity has played an important role in your life, it is so deeply embedded in our Western culture that it's worth trying to understand it. And since the three of us are completely unqualified to talk about that, we're being joined today...
Especially me.
We're being joined today by Brian G. Murphy. He is an activist, an educator, a certified relationship coach, and who grew up evangelical Christian, like Dedeker and myself did. He grew up evangelical Christian in the Maryland suburbs of Washington, D.C. Oh, wow. So governmental. And for the past decade... has been engaged in faith-based activism and social justice work. He also co-founded Legalize Trans and most recently partnered with Father Shannon T. L. Kearns to create queertheology.com. He's spoken about faith, sexuality, gender, and justice at dozens of colleges and conferences across the U.S. and taught a course on the intersection of Christianity and polyamory this past summer. Brian, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Yay. Yeah. So when we started doing Drunk Bible Study, which is a little over a year ago now, I came across Queer Theology online. I came across your podcast actually first and then the site through that. And
oh, awesome.
You know, I read a few things and listened to a little bit and signed up for the mailing list. And then this last, was it winter, I guess? Or no, it was last summer.
Yeah. In the summer. Yeah. Late.
Okay.
Early summer. Yeah.
Right. Then last summer is when I saw on the mailing list that you were doing the Christianity and Polyamory course. And that's when I reached out and we talked on the phone a little bit because you were like, hey, I'm actually going to be talking about some multiamory stuff in that course. So that was cool.
Why, thank you.
Yeah.
You're like a great resource to refer people to.
Yeah. So
oh,
I signed up for the course and joined, and it's been great. But I was wondering if you could start out by telling us what led you to create Queer Theology, the site or the podcast, like which came first and kind of what led to that?
Yeah, it all came kind of at around the same time. The very first thing that we did was a course on how to read the Bible queerly, like from a queer lens. And then after we did that a few times, we created a podcast to sort of go along with it that was free, you know, for everyone. And so every week we take a queer lens to a different passage from the Bible. For the like theology nerds out there, we follow the lectionary.
The lectionary,
switch churches around the world. Like pick a different passage every week. So it's like, it's a set thing that like all Roman Catholic churches are reading the same passage every, like on any given Sunday, and all Episcopal
really?
Churches. Yeah. And so
is it like, is it by a date?
Yeah.
Like,
so there's like a,
on
you
this
go to like
date.
Lectionary.com. Yeah. So like for every Sunday, there's a set of like, a Hebrew Bible reading, a Psalm, a gospel, and then a like Christian Bible that's not the gospel. And so like the Protestant churches that are, you know, like Presbyterian, Methodist, Baptist, some of them follow it, and some of them just do their own thing. They don't have to do it if they don't want to. So we bring our like queer take to it every single week.
Very cool.
The lectionary is a 3-year cycle, right?
Yeah, it's a 3-year cycle, so it repeats itself. But we only do one, generally speaking, we only do one verse per week. So there's like,
oh, I see,
a lot to cover.
Got it.
And so like sometimes we like repeat passages because it's like, well, it's been 3 years, we have something new to say to this. And if it, growing up evangelical Christian, one of the things that I was taught was that there's like one correct way to like understand any given text. And so you would think like, oh, well, you like did it once, it's done. But actually there's like, you bring a lot of different perspectives. Texts have different meanings, and you know, it's oftentimes even intentionally the author is like trying to convey multiple different things. And so we find even when we do the same passage like a year or 3 years later that there's something new to say about it.
That's really interesting, because I've definitely found as we've been playing around with recording Drunk Bible Study that we'll come across some sort of ambiguous passage where we pause and we're like, huh, what is this? What does this mean? And I'll remember from my upbringing, I'm like, oh yeah, the pastor said this. This is what it means. This is what it means. Okay, this is the meaning. There you go. We got the meaning. Now let's move on. And I still have that drive very much in me of like, oh yeah, yeah, this is covered. Check. I got the answer. I can tell you what it means. And it was really an adjustment for me, even though I haven't gone to church in decades now. It was still an adjustment to even open up to that idea of, yeah, there's many, many different lenses that we can put on this and many, many different potential meanings behind this. It's not necessarily empirical.
Yeah, well, a big part of... Sorry.
No, not at all. Yeah, just, and also there's a lot of different translations, and so the meaning can be slightly adjusted through each translation as well.
Yeah, when we were talking before the show, you know, I was saying to Emily that sometimes it's helpful to not have any background to it, because a lot of the work that we do at queertheology.com is like helping people unlearn what they've learned before they can start learning something new in its place, because, you know, we have people that have been out for years and like are affirming of themselves, but then still get caught in, well, the Bible says this, the Bible says that. And it's like, well, it might not say exactly that thing that your pastor told you when you were 14, you know?
Mm, yeah.
That's mind blowing to me.
What? Yeah,
evangelical churches like make you believe that like they're the only like right way to understand things and everyone else is like not real. And that's just like bullshit.
Yeah, that's too bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I was going to say, like, with this collaboration that you're doing with Father Shannon Kearns, how did that come to pass?
Yeah, we met through a mutual best friend back when he used to live in New York City and when I used to live in New York City. And he moved to Minnesota and we stayed kind of in touch and would just like G-chat a bunch back when G-chat was a thing. And then started doing like weekly Skype calls just to like check in on like our various projects that we were working on. I was working for myself and he was like in between jobs. And one day we were talking and he was like, I just realized no one owns queertheology.com. Should I get it?
You're like, ooh, yeah.
You should definitely get that. So we like bought it on that Skype call and then sat on it for 6 months and we were like, what are we going to do with this? And then had this idea to teach this online course on how to read the Bible from a queer perspective. And so like made a one-page website, did that, it sold out. We're like, great, let's do more of this. And then just sort of over the past 6 years have been like incrementally growing in terms of like what we see the community needing, the audience needing, and sort of building what we wish we had when we were younger and sort of like being responsive to stuff that's happening in the world. Because if this stuff doesn't have something to say about the here and now, then like, what's the point?
Yeah.
So we've just been iterating ever since.
Yeah. That's funny. That's there's some similarities there with the Multiamory origin story of noticing that a particular URL was not purchased yet and just kind of hopping on that right away.
I love it.
Over the course of the 6 years, I imagine you've gotten probably a mix of reactions and response to that. I would think that you'd be getting more positive response than negative, or else I would think that this wouldn't still be happening. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I think, you know, the overwhelming response has been positive, and it's been from a mix of like adults who grew up Christian and aren't anymore or still are, and it's been helpful for them in their process. It's been from like parents of LGBTQ kids, or adult children that are trying to figure it out. Sometimes that are like, we've gotten messages from parents that are like, my child just came out to me as like bi or trans or whatever. And I like my religion, I think that it's wrong, but I like, don't, that like seems not right. So I'm like just researching and trying to figure this out. Wow. So it's the whole spectrum of like people who aren't affirming and maybe want to be, people who are affirming, queer folks, non-queer folks. And then, of course, we'd get like hate mail all the time.
Right.
But that's like, I've been doing this work for so long that it's like, well, okay, like.
You don't even care at this point.
At this point, yeah.
It's like, yeah. It's like Westboro Baptist Church called me a crybaby pervert. So at this point, like, what do you got?
I'd put that on a t-shirt, honestly, yeah. If I were you. I mean, to get the attention of the big boys, I guess, as it were, it's like, that's a little bit of a badge of honor.
I know,
if it weren't also wrapped up in like death threats and and all kinds of terrible triggering stuff.
Wow.
So let's bring, since you recently did this course about the intersection of Christianity and polyamory, let's bring polyamory and non-monogamy into the conversation. And let's start, before talking about the Christian perspective on it, let's just talk about the intersections of queerness and polyamory, but also the important distinction that they're not the same thing necessarily.
For sure. Yeah. I did this cross-country activism thing called the Soul First Equality Ride, which visits colleges and universities across the country that discriminate against queer folks to be like, this shit's fucked up. What are you doing? And some of them are like, this is great. Come on, let's talk about it. We'll have like Bible studies or lectures or group discussions. And some schools are like, this is our property line. If you cross it, we will arrest you.
Wow.
So you're like, okay, we're coming.
Oh boy.
So I did that for 2 months, and that was a whole mix of like really intense Christians to like really intense, like vegan, polyamorous atheists. And so that was like my first introduction to non-monogamy. I was just like a buttoned up evangelical Christian kid that had like just come out a few years prior. And I was like, it's okay to be gay because God loves me, but like you still have to be a Christian in order to like get to heaven and blah, 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 all that terrible, toxic stuff. And so I sort of like, I got this like first tease of an open relationship or polyamorous relationships. And then, So then I was dating my boyfriend for 2 years, and we were considering opening up our relationship, and I went out searching for resources and like found all the usual suspects like The Ethical Slut and stuff like that. And this was 8 years ago, so there was even less of it. And I was realizing that like queer folks have been doing non-monogamy and polyamory and open relationships for like a really long time. And also I was finding like formal open and poly books and articles and websites and communities had queerness in it, in that like there were like usually some bi folks, definitely bi women, sometimes bi men, but it was very much this sort of like straight ethos to it. And like bi men who were like in relationships with women who would like sometimes play with guys. You would like rarely, I rarely encountered like lots of groups of like butch lesbians all in a poly space, or like gay men, right? So there's this like, we're both sort of doing this thing and there's some overlap there, but it's not all one big happy queer poly family. And so that sort of led us to like, how do I find the poly resources that speak to like my experience and the people that are like me and where I like feel safe, honestly.
Right. And so was that kind of part of like what inspired you to kind of start creating some of your own resources?
Yeah. I mean, I sort of informally just like became, and like, I don't know, 8 years ago, stuff happened so quickly. Like I was my boyfriend and I were like the first open couple that any of our friends knew. And I think like now a lot of our friends are in open polyamorous relationships.
Right.
And so I just sort of became like the guy that people would be like, oh, like tell me more about this. Or, and it started with like, I can never do that, to like, so how does this work?
Interesting.
And I, for whatever reason, just like gay men in particular weren't finding resonating with, like poly resources. And I went to like some like poly meetups and poly cocktails, and it was like nice and fun, but there was definitely this sort of like a little bit of an othering experience. So I've sort of like been poly for a long time and had to just sort of like do this sort of informal networking with friends. And whenever I would find like a person or a couple that were like also not just like in a don't ask don't tell open relationship, but like actually poly, be like, oh, you're like one of us, you like you get it. So both with queer theology and with sort of on my own work on like YouTube, sort of being like creating the change I wish to see in the world, and creating resources that I wish that I had.
Yeah, definitely. So let's sprinkle the Christianity back into it with queerness and the queer community in general, and then also with polyamory and the polyamorous community in general, how do you feel like Christianity, and I mean, just to say that makes it sound like such a monolith, but what do you think like the general Christian treatment has been of both of them, and how have they been different?
Yeah, I mean, I think like the mainstream, loudest, most vocal type of Christianity in the US and Europe, right, has been like very anti-LGBT and like very like anti-poly. I think that it's tricky to say that there's like a Christian perspective on anything. Like even if you read the Bible, there's like not a Christian sexual ethic or a Christian understanding of marriage. There's, you know, polygamous marriages in the Bible. There's monogamous marriages in the Bible. Paul says that everyone should be celibate and single for their whole lives, that like singleness is the Christian ideal, right? And so,
sorry, spoilers for me. I'm like,
Emily's
what?
Reacting because we haven't gotten to that part in the Bible.
Yeah. That's a ways forward, but like,
yeah, I'll probably forget about it between now and then.
Christians being like, everyone should really be single. That's like what God wants for you, but that's also in the Bible. And so,
fascinating. It's a lot of picking and choosing.
Yeah, there's a lot of picking and choosing. And I think like they accuse us being queer people or poly people of picking and choosing. But I think like evangelical Christians and conservative Christians are like, a really big picker, cherry pickers also.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I thought it was interesting when you were mentioning earlier about doing the cross-country thing, talking at different campuses. And, you know, you were saying for yourself, you were like newly out as being gay. And, but it sounded like still the idea of non-monogamy was still a little bit like, whoa, but that's kind of out there. So I think that that's interesting too, that, and I've noticed this with a variety of things, but it's like maybe someone could re-examine their faith based on an experience they've had, whether it's about their own sexual attraction or about non-monogamy or something, and they'll find a way to maybe reconcile that for themselves with the Bible, but still all the other things that they were taught were bad are still, they're still bad. You know, they still have that.
Yeah, when we were doing the Christianity polyamory course, I got an email from someone who described himself as a gay man and said, like, how dare you do this course on polyamory when, like, the Bible is, like, so clearly against it. And I was like, dude, the Bible is much more clearly, like, pro-non-monogamy than it is pro-gay. Like, I don't know world you're living in. But, like, yeah, I think that it's, like, a process, and we all carry our own shame and baggage and are working on like the pain points in our life. And so like, if you don't have a desire to be poly, you might not necessarily notice that that's an area that needs your attention until someone sort of forces you to.
Right.
I think like, you know, I like, you know, I was, it took a while for me to sort of figure out that it was like, okay, to be non-monogamous or polyamorous. And I think as a gay man, I'm actually bisexual, but I came out as gay for, it took me a while to figure out that I was bi. But so as like a gay man, I was like, I have to be like the right type of gay. And like, they say that we're promiscuous and we can't have meaningful relationships and all of our relationships are open relationships. And so I have to like be monogamous and go to church and get married and have 2.5 kids so that I can like prove my goodness. Mm-hmm. And like the lie is that you can never be good enough. Like, so like, why try? But I see, you know, with secular queer folks, sometimes they're like, okay with the queer thing, but like not with the poly thing. And so it takes some work still.
Can I just back up for a second and ask, like, you said that in the Bible, there's a lot more instances where it's okay to be polyamorous or non-monogamous or polygamous or something, but less okay to be queer or to be gay. But I only recall in my short time of reading the Bible that one passage in Leviticus where they were talking about how it's not okay to lie a man with a man. And is there more later on?
So it's like, it's tricky because like homosexuality as like an identity concept just like didn't exist 2,000 years ago. And so we have like, there's a few other passages in the Bible that folks point to be like, this is why you can't be gay. There's like seven passages. They're called the clobber passages.
About to talk about that.
Well,
yeah.
So let's combine that into one question. So just real quick side note here that Emily has a question on our document here to ask about the clobber passages and like what those are.
But part of it was, what the heck is it? Because I didn't know what it was, but you just said it. So why don't you tell us what it is? And then... yeah, talk about like queerness in the Bible and these clobber passages, what exactly that is and what it encapsulates.
Sure. So there's seven passages that traditionally anti-LGBTQ Christians point to say that like homosexuality is a sin. And like, obviously in all of this, no one's talking about trans stuff. There's like maybe just there's like two maybe passages that folks point to say like, this is why you shouldn't be trans. And like Shay wrote a whole article about sort of that for on our website a few years ago. But so it's like the story of Adam and Eve, the story of Sodom and Gomorrah, that passage that you're referring to in Leviticus that says like a man shall not lie with a man as with a woman. It's an abomination. Romans 1, which is this like letter from Paul to the Romans that's like sort of weird. And this particular part of the passage is kind of weird and lots of imagery. And then this 1 Timothy that has these two words that like no one really knows what the meanings are, but conservative Christians say that it means being gay. And so I think
similarly, you just rattled those off. I'm very impressed.
You know, like when you like think that you might be going to hell because of this, like, you spent a lot of time, but I thought so the trick is I spent many years like trying to read these passages like over and over and over and over again, and if I could just like find the right translation or the right analysis, I would like it would all click and it would like be okay to be gay. And then like that point just like never came, because there's always like a counterpoint and a counterpoint to the counterpoint. And so you just like get stuck on these like seven passages. And so the reason why we started queertheology.com is to say like there's so much more to being queer than just always defending ourselves against what we're not. And we get stuck sort of like in the oppressor's game when we always only focus on these things. And so a more faithful way to look at the Bible is to like zoom out and say like, how do like queerness and Christianity go together just sort of in general? And like, what does queerness have to add to this conversation? And I see like a similar path happening with polyamory, that it can be really tempting to be like, show me in the Bible where it says it's okay to be polyamorous, or like show me in the Bible where it says it's not okay to be polyamorous. And like, it's like not always helpful, because it was a completely different culture. And so when we're talking about like a man marrying like multiple women, that like seems to be condoned by God and society, like sure, but also like what's happening with consent there, and do they really have agency? Mm-hmm. And sometimes there's like slaves or concubines happening there. And so it's just like a different time and place, and we have to, it's like tempting to get stuck in the details and lose sight of like the bigger picture and like what was like the significance of all of that in that time and in that place. And that's like maybe not as like snappy and soundbitey and sexy, but it's, I think, important work. And
more
so
important.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting that you frame it as sexy, because I was going to frame it as just, I think there's a little bit of almost a sadness in the sense that as human beings, we're so desperate for things to just be freaking clear for once. Mm-hmm. Like, can you just for once tell me clearly what's right, what's wrong? Is it okay to be gay? Is it not okay to be gay? Is it okay to be non-monogamous? Is it not? Can you just point me somewhere so that it's clear, so I don't have to think about it and worry about it? And there's just so few avenues of life that actually give us clarity about anything, unfortunately.
Save big money now on new siding from LP Smart Side at Menards. Update and beautify your home with your choice of 13 timeless colors of pre-finished engineered siding. It's durable and includes a Sherwin-Williams factory finish paint warranty that means no painting for years to come. View our entire selection of siding from LP Smart Side today. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we get messages all the time, email, social media, Tumblr, that's like, is it okay to be polyamorous? Like, is it okay to be gay? Is it okay to masturbate? Like, is it okay to watch porn? Like, and my one of my like recent partners who grew up atheist also was like, people message you on Tumblr asking it's okay.
But they're on Tumblr.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
not anymore, though, I guess. Not anymore.
Yeah, there's definitely this human desire for like black and white and order and meaning. And like conservative churches, anti-gay churches, anti-poly churches like play to that. And they say like, we have all of the answers. If you just follow these rules, your life will go well. And for some people it does. And then for anyone whose life either doesn't go well, or who doesn't follow the rules, they get kicked out or shamed or shunned. And it's terrible.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. So I've heard both you and Friar Shay say basically the same thing that you just did about kind of why focusing on those clobber passages and just like, well, how do I then use this same sort of like analytical rule-based reading to now say that either these rules are invalid or there's other places that have rules that say it's okay, how that's not really a helpful place to be because you're kind of playing the oppressor's game. And I thought that wording was interesting. And I've heard both of you say a variation on that. I was wondering if you could kind of like, is that basically what you mean? Is like playing this game of let's define rules and legalize it or what? Like,
yeah, I mean, I didn't come up with a concept where like Audre Lorde has this quote, like the master's tools will never just like tear down the master's house. Mm. But also I think especially with queerness in the Bible and those passages, it's like a yes and. Like that passage in Leviticus like is like almost certainly not actually condemning modern day queer people, and you can like rigorously academically study it, like, and also at the end of the day that is like not fulfilling and like not life-giving to just like be stuck reading about like ancient Hebrew and like ancient Israelite cultures, and that there's like a more effective, more efficient way of exploring queerness and Christianity and like seeing the goodness of queer people and queer lives than like trying to be an archaeologist.
Yeah, that is interesting. That,
and also, like, the scholarship is the same. Like, it hasn't, like, all of those books were written 30 years ago. Like, so you can read a book on Leviticus or Romans or Corinthians that will, like, really go into depth and sort of, like, prove, if you will, at least in my mind, that it, those passages don't mean what anti-queer people say that they mean. And so, like, clearly that is not enough. Like, just the scholarship being there is like not enough to like move hearts and minds and culture. And so, you know, humans are meaning making machines. So faith is a way that people look for meaning. How can we sort of like tap into that thing that's bigger than ourselves to really sort of like unlock the power of queerness rather than sort of like getting trapped in defining these passages that someone else told us, describe us, that like they clearly don't, but like they'll just keep saying like, yes, it does, yes, it does, yes, it does, over and over again until we're dead. And so like pack up and move on.
Yeah, I get it that to a certain extent that just prevents, that it just presents you with this insurmountable obstacle preventing you from being able to pursue what the good stuff might be on the other side of that. And so I know that you and Friar Shay, you know, teach an entire course on this, but I'm wondering if you could give us kind of a sampling or a tasting, if you will, because it's like when you take out, you know, when you're not focusing on those clobber passages and you're not focusing on just let's build a biblically sound argument for justifying our existence, how do you feel that, you know, queerness, like what are the other things in the Bible that you've found that really, you know, do kind of bring out the power of queerness, like you just said?
So I think this is like an ancient practice that like rabbis throughout the ages would like look at the text and like say like, this is what it means for our time. And that's like Jesus in many ways was looking at like his, Jesus was Jewish, like looking at his like sacred text and saying like, this is what this means for like my time and place. And so this idea that we're like engaging with a text and saying like, what does this mean for me here and now? And what does my experience have to like, how to, can that illuminate this particular passage or this story or like whatever is like not something that like we made up in 2019. It's been going on for millennia. And so I think like, you know, one of the ways that we, like one of the ideas about God is that like that God loves us, and there's this sort of like abundance of God's love, and like God is not like finite and limited. And so this, you know, I think in polyamory, that is a sort of same key concept, right? That like my love is like not finite, and not my love for multiple partners doesn't like diminish my love for any of them. And so I think we can sort of see this, like, this is like a way that I can live out this idea of abundant, infinite love through polyamory, whereas it's okay to be monogamous, but also like sort of like forced monogamy has this idea of there's like a limited amount of love. And so that's sort of like in some ways like antithetical to, I think, the Christian and Jewish understanding of sort of God's expansive love for us.
So there are still a lot of objections out there to non-monogamy and the Bible. And I think that some things that at least that I've seen in my very like brief reading, which I'm only up to Deuteronomy at this point, but there are like Adam and Eve were only two people and they created all of humanity. And then also this idea of like two becoming one flesh.
That's a Spice Girls
and
song,
like,
right?
Yeah.
Is it? So,
when two
yeah.
Like, become it, one. You know.
I don't know if they say one flesh, but yeah
okay, maybe
I
not.
Guess it is.
Yeah.
But so those are like some common objections to non-monogamy. So what would you say about that, for instance? If people like throw things like that out there, then would you be like, well, actually...
I love this idea of two becoming one flesh. I actually wrote an article a few years ago called like What Promiscuity Taught Me About God's Love, which was sort of like, I was starting to put together like these ideas on promiscuity and sex positivity and non-monogamy, and that then became this course. But so I think like that's like true or like can be true or can be like this beautiful thing that like you like merge with someone else and like not in a like you like lose yourself, but that you create something new. There's like me and my boyfriend, and then like our relationship is this other thing that we've like created by the sort of mystical magic of our like beings coming together.
Your love. Yeah.
And so like that's like real. You know, I think also about like, so there's this like metaphor with this two become one that we learn in Bible like Sunday school, which is like sex is kind of like duct tape, and if you like stick it on something and then you like rip it off, like it hurts when you rip it off, and then like little pieces of skin and hair get left behind. And
no, Emily, this is literally an object lesson that Sunday school teachers will use, where they will like stick tape to multiple people, and it's usually essentially equate women with
bit.
A piece of tape, usually, or a piece of chewed up gum. That's another common
object
lesson.
I'm sorry, that is child abuse. That is not okay.
Yeah, like all over the country, all different denominations.
Just people are
clearly
sticking tape on kids and tearing it off.
It's like, yeah, and it teaches you like on a fundamental level, like. Like, I'm a chewed up piece of gum is like, what a terrible thing to teach a child, right?
Yeah.
So the idea is that like, you're eventually your sex tape becomes less like sticky, and then it doesn't work anymore. And then like, you're sort of fundamentally broken, and like, that's, you ruined your life because you had sex with too many people. Really terrible, right? But like, I think that you can sort of like reclaim this metaphor, because not that the tape ever stops being sticky, but that like, I think that all of the people that I've ever dated have like left little bits and pieces of their part behind, of themselves like behind on me, and I carry them around with me, and I hope that I've left a little bit of piece of myself with them behind. Mm. And that's true like for boyfriends, but it's also been true for just like, you know, kinky hookups or play partners or casual dates or even like one night stands. Sometimes we have a digital magazine called Spit and Spirit, and I wrote for our Sex and Bodies issue like a prayer for a one night stand, and that like there can be something like beautiful and wonderful about a one night stand, even that like you're vulnerable and you trust each other and like you're intimate and you're taking care of each other, that there's like something really beautiful can happen there also. And so this idea that like, A, like, it's only special, quote unquote, if it's with a long-term partner, I think is not true in my experience. And then also that, like, you have that you like run out of stuff to leave behind if you have sex with more than one person. It's just like not real for me. It's been like an additive thing that like my life has become enriched by the people that I've either dated or hooked up with. And that's not to say that like sometimes sex is coercive or bad, and I've had my fair share of like really terrible sexual experiences also. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to be like, sex is always this like beautiful divine thing.
Sure. But,
like, it can be like sex with your spouse can be sacred, and like blowing a stranger in a glory hole can also be like sacred.
And I'd argue on the other side that having sex with your spouse can also be coercive and shitty. So, you know, they both can go both ways. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead, Jace.
No, I think I solved the tape metaphor.
Oh, so, you solved it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, like you were saying, you know, this tape that, but the problem with their metaphor is that, you know, then your tape gets less sticky. But if you're using that, you know, like vinyl bondage tape, you know, that only sticks to itself, then you can keep, then it doesn't lose its stickiness. Anyway, that's okay. Yeah. Go ahead.
So now you can create a program to try to introduce, you know, bondage tape into Sunday schools across the land.
Oh man. Yeah, there you go.
Well, so, okay. That sentiment of, you know, that this can be sacred regardless of the type of sex that you're having. It does echo stuff that we talked about with our guest a couple of years ago, Jessica Graham. You know, she wrote a book that was about mindfulness meditation, you know, slightly more from a Buddhist perspective. But she also writes a lot about kind of the intersection of spirituality and sex, and came to a lot of the same conclusions of, you know, a weird kinky hookup in an alleyway with someone that you just met, and let's kind of presume everyone's making the best, healthiest, safest choices. You know, that can also be a spiritual experience. And, you know, she shared with me getting so much resistance over saying things like that. And I just think that like, there is this huge cultural resistance to this idea that any kind of casual sex can be sacred whatsoever. Hmm. Even if you're totally divorced of any kind of spirituality, I think that even on just a plain old cultural level, you know, what's baked into the casual sex experience is like, none of this can be serious because, oh goodness, you're such a weirdo. If you're taking this seriously, we have to be completely devoid of any kind of emotions or engagement or investment in this. It's purely just about having sex and then, you know, not texting each other or whatever.
Yeah. And if we have a casual hookup, then you're no longer like long-term partner material for some reason.
Right, it's such a strange script that we've been trained to follow for these things.
Yeah,
yeah,
I think
that's super unfortunate.
That is true. I think of that's something that like queer people internalize as sort of like a right way to be queer, and is this, I think when you're like even straight cis mono people when they're single like have to navigate this, and I think it just like compounds if you're trying to be open or poly, if you're queer, if your openness or polyness involves casual sex and not just like multiple long-term relationships, you know, that there's, it's like, okay, well, I can, I've even gotten from like Christianity polyamory course, like, well, I can understand like if you're in a triad or if you have these sort of like multiple long-term, like loving partnerships, like that is okay. But like, I don't know, like the Trinity being an orgy, like what are you talking about? It sort of like blows people's mind. And so, and I think that like our culture is super, super sex negative, whether, you know, you were saying at the beginning of this episode that like Christianity in particular just sort of like permeates like everything. And this like sex negative, anti-queer, puritanical version of Christianity permeates everything. And so even people that never grew up Christian or no longer identified Christian oftentimes have this like religious baggage to sort of unpack.
Right. Gosh, can I rewind back to like earlier on in this conversation? Something that like, okay, in the idea of like saying, okay, I've figured out how to reconcile being gay or being queer or something, but not non-monogamy or things like that. Or saying that idea that, okay, if I'm going to be Christian and gay, or just gay in general, I want to try to prove everyone wrong about all their stereotypes about me. So I'm going to try to go really hard the opposite way of being super monogamous, super marriage-based, super kid-focused, whatever it is. And I think that with, like, I've definitely seen in ourselves and also in our community that same thing with polyamory of this, like,
sure.
Let's try to fight against this image that we're all, that none of our relationships are serious. And so we're going to treat all of them super seriously and kind of not allow relationships to be casual when maybe that would have been the healthier way for them to be, or other things like that. And I guess it's just, it's making me think about with all of this tricky thing between, it's like, how do you show people that all polyamorous people are not this one way, or that all gay people are not this one way, while also leaving room for, but even if they are those things, that's also okay. And that's hard. Like, that's a hard message to sell. It's not a very sexy message to sell. It's, you know, harder to put that on a postcard.
Exactly.
Like, you can't
sound, like, bites.
Yeah. Like your slogan, like, love wins. Cool, great. Now everyone can be monogamously married, as opposed to, like, love wins, but so does casual sex. That's a harder postcard to make.
Yeah, I mean, so, like, I think there's, like, this idea that that, like, sometimes called respectability politics, that if we can just sort of, like, brush up enough that, like, they'll like us enough. And, you know, I think Black folks started it with this idea of, like, we have to, like, wear suits and be proper. And, like, sort of, like, incremental, like, well, first we'll let, like, the gays get married, and then, like, maybe we'll start talking about bi folks, and then after that we can start talking about trans people. It's sort of, like, the, like, start with, like, the most least offensive, quote-unquote least offensive, like, idea or identity, and sort of work from there. And we've just seen that, like, that, like, isn't effective. That, you know, after gay marriage passed in Massachusetts, like, they lost tons of funding around LGBT issues. I think, like, LGBT homeless shelters had to shut down. Like, the focus goes elsewhere. That, like, rich white cis gays who want to get monogamously married, like, aren't coming back for like trans people of color. And so, like, but on the flip side of that, like, you know, I forget who said it, but, like, this idea that, like, none of us are free until all of us are free, and that sort of a rising tide lifts all ships, that a more effective, efficient way of sort of addressing our organizing and our activism is to try and, like, cut at those both, like, cultural stigmas themselves and say, like, why do these exist, and also, like, work to change, like, structural policy that stands in the way, so that we can all, like, live a more, like, free and like, independent life. And I wish that the lesbian and gay movement, rather than focusing on, like, gay marriage, had said, like, we, like, need to, like, radically redefine what family means, and queer folks have been defining family outside of the purview of the state forever because we haven't been allowed to access this. And, like, rather than fighting to be allowed into this sort of traditionally oppressive, traditionally patriarchal system that, like, doles out rights based upon, like, respectability and says, like, you're in and you're not, we had said, like, no, like, we know how to form family, we take care of each other, like, lesbians taking care of gay men as they were dying of AIDS in the 80s, and queer chosen family, and this sort of, like, fluidity amongst, like, lovers and friends and partners and parents, that's just, like, this, like, I think queer folks have this, like, beautiful gift to offer. And it frustrates me that some people pointed all that energy towards gay marriage, because I think, like, if marriage is going to exist, obviously gay people should be able to get married, like, and also, like, there's something, like, more beautiful and revolutionary that we have to offer the world. And thankfully queer folks are still, like, organizing around that and trying to share that, and I think more so and more so beginning to, like, merge with, like, poly and non-monogamous folks that are also doing that work from sort of a different perspective. And like, who knows what the future holds, but I think that, like, that's where I would like to see it go.
Well, it reminds me, this was something that I was not aware of until only in the retrospect did I become aware of this, that, you know, around 2015 and leading up to 2015, when gay marriage was legalized, that there were quite a number of queer voices who were speaking up about, like, actually, I don't want marriage to be the thing, you know, mm-hmm. like, I want it to be something else. We need to be pushing for something else. It's not about, like you said, kind of getting admitted to this exclusive club that's still very patriarchal and has all this baggage. And I remember at that time, you know, it seems like the mainstream wasn't really focusing a lot of those voices because they don't fit into this kind of convenient, right. at least, okay, from a more liberal leftist perspective, it doesn't fit into this convenient, like, well, if you're detracting gay marriage, you're a bad person. And if you're pro gay marriage, you're a good person. It fits into this weird in between of like, oh wait, you're pro gay rights, but you don't necessarily think that we should just be pouring all our energy into gay marriage. And I've put myself in the hypothetical of, because at some point someone's going to actually try to push for non-monogamous marriage.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think that's actually realistically going to be a thing that happens or is successful, but at some point someone's going to push for it. There's going to be some kind of media coverage on it. And I know that where I stand, where I feel, is I'm like, hell no. Like, I don't, like, this is not what I want to be pushing for, you know? Mm. Again, that same feeling of, yes, I think that maybe sure if someone who is non-monogamous wants to get married, they should be able to access that, but I don't want this to be the thing. And realizing there is a weird discomfort there in kind of being perceived as maybe quote unquote part of the problem, depriving people of rights rather than part of a force trying to just redirect attention and energy to maybe something that is more important and powerful and beautiful, like things like chosen families that queer communities have been essentially mastering for decades.
For a long time now, we've been fans of AdamandEve.com for getting sex toys or lingerie or accessories, things like that. It's just a fantastic resource with a huge selection. And now, not only do we have a fantastic offer, but we also have a promo code that will work on AdamMale.com and EvesToys.com, which are their sites specifically for LGBTQ audiences. And our code is fantastic. It's 50% off of almost any item in the store and free discreet shipping when you use our code MULTI.
Yes, we love AdamandEve.com and have for years. They are our oldest and longest sponsor, and they just keep on giving great gifts to us and to our listeners. You can bring more pleasure and satisfaction into your bedroom by going to AdamandEve.com, AdamMale.com, or EvesToys.com and select any one item. It can be, you know, an adventurous new toy or anything you desire, something fun, something sexy, whatever sounds good.
So just enter offer code MULTI at checkout and you'll get 50% off almost any item plus free shipping. That's MULTI, MULTI at AdamandEve.com, AdamMale.com, or EvesToys.com. This is an exclusive offer that is specific to this podcast and it's better than any offer that is currently available on their site. So again, use code MULTI to get you not just the 50% discount, but also the 100% free shipping. Code MULTI.
Yeah, absolutely. I think like we should all have healthcare because we deserve healthcare. We should be able to like form the families
Amen.
That we want to form. And you know, I think this is to bring it back to Christianity for a second, that my understanding of Christianity and of the Hebrew Bible is there's this like a really like powerful critique of empire and the state throughout the Hebrew and the Christian Bible. And so like, I think from a Christian perspective, you can also say like pouring all of this like energy into assimilating into like the state and the empire is like not necessarily a helpful or a smart move. And so I think that, you know, there's,
it's not very Christ-like when you think about
it. Jesus was executed by the Roman Empire as like a prisoner of the state for being like a political insurrectionist. Right. And so that's like that context. And so like, that's like fucking awesome. And I think like Jesus like was probably not polyamorous in the way that we understand polyamory today, but I think like a lot of the ideals that Jesus was like working around in terms of healing people and standing up against the state and creating this sort of like unconventional family of sorts and befriending women who were caught in sexual scandal or accused at least of sexual scandal, right? I made this video called Jesus is Polyamorous, which really pissed off.
Well, yes, I was about to, we're not like a gotcha kind of show, but I was about to gotcha and be like, wait, but you made a video that said that Jesus was polyamorous and pansexual and everyone loved it and no one disagreed with you, right?
Everyone loved it.
We're just like, yeah. Obviously.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about that video and the reaction to it.
Yeah, so I think like this particular video is looking at this, it's just like this one particular passage in Ephesians where the writer of Ephesians is talking about Christ's relationship to the church as sort of like analogous to like a marriage relationship, like a man's marriage to a woman. And also like elsewhere in the book, the author talks about how like the church is comprised of like the whole body of believers. So it's like, it's all these people and Jesus is sort of metaphysically married to the church, which conservative Christians would say like the church is like one single entity, but like, and also it's clearly not. So I think people got hung up on me saying like Jesus like was polyamorous as sort of like as like a historical reality, whereas what I was saying is like Jesus or Christ as this theological figure like is polyamorous, and I think that's like a distinction. Like Jesus, you could also make the claim that like Jesus is asexual, or Jesus is gay, or Jesus is like trans, if that like sort of like resonates with you. You know, Jesus was the narrative, like the story goes, right, like born of this virgin Mary, so like didn't have a father, so like therefore like no Y chromosome, so then like only XX chromosomes, so Jesus is in some way like gender non-conforming or trans or intersex, right? Like, so if that is something that speaks to you, great. Like, but also Jesus, if he was a person, had like two human parents. like there's this all this myth like that, like, and the writers of the Bible like know what they're doing, right? Like Jesus is Lord is a saying that appears in the Bible, right? And it's because at the time the Roman emperor was just like Caesar is Lord is sort of like the political saying of the day. And so to say Jesus is Lord means like, and therefore Caesar is not. So it was this sort of like treasonous political claim just as much as it was a theological claim. And so playing with language and making these like claims about Jesus to say like, this is why Jesus is important, and this is like where the heart of God is on this matter, is sort of what Christians have always done. And so we were doing that to say like, this is where the heart of God is sort of like with poly folks and in this sort of like abundant, expansive love and connection,
right? But in kind of a pokey way.
like the writers of the Bible, you knew what you were doing and a little dissenting. So there was this one particular article that was fed to my news feed that was a response to your video. I'm sure you, well, actually, I don't know if you read stuff like that, but I'm not going to read it to you.
I read some of them, but there was a lot.
I'm sure. Yeah. So one thing, though, that was interesting about this is, so, you know, he's kind of like going through line by line and making arguments and whatever. But this is one particular quote from the author of this article that said, quote, "If you call yourself a Christian and believe every word of the Bible to be true, integrating polyamory with your faith is like trying to mix oil and water together." And what was funny is I read that and I was like, I think Brian would agree with you. If you believe all of these words are literally true, then maybe yes. And I think that's that kind of, to me at least, touched on the core thing that changed for me in my relationship to the Bible when I first started looking into it in college. Was, for me, it started with coming from a place of translation and realizing that most of this is translations of translations. This is before even getting into the fact that there have been political reasons for things being added or edited out over the, you know, hundreds of years or thousands of years that these different texts have been around. But it kind of, to me, that sort of struck on a core point of it. And it seems like you were saying something very similar, actually, that it's like the difference between looking at it as a literal rule book versus looking at what was actually happening in context.
Yeah, to take the Bible seriously and faithfully, you can't take it literally. And also, like, it doesn't want to be taken literally. And the, like, every word of the Bible can't actually be true because the Bible contradicts itself in places.
Yeah, a lot.
Like, especially, you're going through this, like, you've seen it. Like, the first two chapters of Genesis are, like, contradictory, like, incompatible accounts of creation, right? They're just, like, different. And, like, that's okay because it's, like, they're not trying to write a science textbook. The authors of the Bible aren't trying to write a guide to sex and dating. especially, like, not a guide to sex and dating in like, the third millennia, right? So, yeah, I think that, like, it's not about saying, like, I have to, like, justify every single part of this thing. It's, like, what is this? Like, what's happening here? What's trying to be said here? Like, how does that fit? And, like, we also have to, like, recognize that, like, they didn't know about physics necessarily or astronomy or biology. And they weren't necessarily trying to. And so, like, I think conservative Christians sometimes say, like, this is our rule book. I was told that the Bible stands for basic instructions before leaving Earth.
And gosh, it's this, that, like, freaking acronym. Like,
what is it? What is it?
Basic instructions before leaving Earth. And the Ten Commandments. Okay.
Sorry,
Emily's face.
Whoa. That's a lot.
I cannot roll my eyes harder. Not because I think it's necessarily a bad acronym. It's just, it's
Bible.
Just so tired out.
Oh, it's for Bible.
Oh my goodness, Emily.
Jeez, Emily.
What did you think it was?
I thought it, for a minute it was bibs, and then I was like, no, it's not. It's Bible. I'm so sorry. I've had a glass of wine. We're getting ready for drunk Bible study. It's been a long day.
Oh, boy.
All right. Wow. But okay, yeah,
sorry, please continue.
That's a thing.
So I think, like, going back to what y'all were saying earlier, that, like, people want sort of a rule book. They want to say, like, tell me, like, what is good and what is okay. And so, like, they just say, like, this is what it means, this is what it means, this is what it means. And that's in some ways easier than sort of, like, diving into, like, when was this written? Like, I know that it says it was written by Moses, but actually it was probably written in, like, BC 700. And, like, who was it written to? And, like, as Jace was saying, like, what did they leave out? Like, that's all much more, it's like reading Shakespeare, right? Like, if you just, like, read Shakespeare in 10th grade English class, like, not exactly knowing what's going on, you, like, don't realize that he's, like, cracking smutty jokes or that he's, like, taking a jab at the monarchy. And it's, like, similar that to that in with the Bible. And certain types of Christians have said, like, all you have to do is just read the Bible and you don't have to worry about that, and we'll tell you what it means. And so, like, we're saying, like, well, they have a perspective and they have a bias and an agenda. And, you know, we say, like, we're queer theology and there's Christianity and polyamory and there's Black liberation theology. But, like, very rarely does someone say, like, I'm a, like, like, rich white male theology, and that's what I'm doing. Like, I'm like doing, like, patriarchal theology right now. But that's what's happening. We're also like looking at this text and, like, wrestling with it and trying to figure out, like, what does it mean and how does it apply to our lives. And I think the more you study it seriously, the more that you can see it as a sort of, like, book or collection of books written by oppressed people for oppressed people to give them, like, hope and encouragement to, like, survive and thrive and, like, fight the good fight.
To kind of go along those lines, for our listeners, our non-monogamous or otherwise listeners, are there historical things that one should think about when reading the Bible? And specifically also, like, if the Bible is being used against queer and non-monogamous folk, then, like, what are historical things that people can think about when reading it?
Sure. Well, we're teaching a whole course on how to do
I'm
this
assuming,
right
yeah,
now.
Just like a couple. I don't know.
Yeah, so
a few.
I think where I always start with is, like, you, like, don't even necessarily have to do that. That, like, you are just, like, good and whole as you are. And you, like, don't need this Bible to tell you that. And if the messages that you're receiving from Christianity are, like, not life-giving to you and you have too much trauma and it, like, doesn't feel good and is not serving you, like, it's okay to leave that behind. And in the same way that, like, you don't have to be a good gay person by getting married or a good poly person by having long-term relationships, like, you don't have to be a good poly Christian by like staying Christian, or a good gay Christian by staying Christian. Like, if it's just shit, just like move on, and like that's okay. And I think that Jesus would be okay with that also. But so I one of the passages that I go to a lot is in Matthew 7, I think, where Jesus is talking about you can judge. Yeah, Emily's like, sure.
Well, I believe you. You've done a really amazing job like rattling off these things.
So Jesus is like giving this parable or speech or whatever, and he's saying that you can people are going to come like proclaiming the like to like proclaim the gospel, saying to speak for me, and how you can decipher whether or not like what they're saying is actually like of me or of God is that you can judge a tree by its fruit, and like a good tree is like going to bear good fruit and a bad tree is going to bear bad fruit. And so if you look at theology that is like anti-LGBT or like anti-poly or anti-women, you can like then look at the fruits of that and see that people are like depression, anxiety, fracturing relationships, like oppression, rape, like all of these like bad fruits stem from this like bad theology. Whereas if you like look at affirming theology, whether that's LGBT affirming or poly affirming theology, you can like see the good fruits of that. And so like Jesus wasn't like, what you have to do is get a like doctorate in religion and learn Greek and Hebrew and
become a
Republican. Right. Become a Republican and like assent to this like set of theoretical beliefs and say that you're not having sex until marriage, but you probably are anyways, but you feel bad about it. And like then that's how you inherit eternal life. Jesus is like, I've come to proclaim like release for the prisoners and healing of sight for the blind and to set the captives free. And like, we're gonna like bring in the year of the Lord's favor of canceling debts and like really fucking shit up in a good way. And so Jesus was like, come and follow me and like do this work of like building a better world. And so if you're like interested in like, there's all sorts of books that you can read, and I can give you some links to put in the show notes if you want. But like, I think first and foremost, it's like if you're like doing the work of building a better world, you're like doing the work of God as like the Hebrew and the Christian Bibles describe it. And so that right there is enough, and you don't have to always have an academic justification for your inherent goodness.
That's sweet. Really beautiful.
Yeah.
I know. That was very moving. Also, yeah. I really...
You weren't correct. It's Matthew 7:15 is what you were looking for.
Oh, good, Jace.
I checked to make sure.
Yeah, I heard like a little dog running across something, but I think it was just Jace's fingers.
On the keyboard.
Tippity-tapping.
Yeah, I was like, is
making sure that you're not wrong.
Yeah.
Well, I like us closing on that note of let's fuck shit up, but in a good way. So, yeah. Brian... thank you so much for being with us. Where can our listeners find more of you and more of your work?
Yeah, you can find me on all the social medias at this is BGM and this is BGM.com. And my YouTube is not that. So it's this is BGM.com/YouTube.
Great. Excellent. Cool. And then people are interested in the queer theology course as well, they can go to queertheology.com, correct?
Yeah, queertheology.com. Okay. And that will link to all of our courses and all of our social media and our various sort of free resources as well.
Great.
Yeah, and by the time this episode comes out, I will just be finishing the Reading the Bible course, which I'm in the middle of when we're recording this, but by the time this comes out, it'll be ending.
Wait, does that mean that you've read the whole thing again?
No. No, actually, no. So in this course, this particular one, you end up, each person picks just one section of the Bible, like one chapter or one section of verses that you study through the whole thing. That's okay. This particular one, that's kind of what they're doing to more teach tools to look at the Bible rather than like, we're going to teach you how to understand the Bible. Kind of like Brian's been saying this whole time, right? It's not so much about, we're going to give you the answers, but like, we're going to teach you how to think about the Bible.
Love it.
Yeah. So, for our patrons out there, we're going to be hanging out with Brian a little bit more, and talking a little bit more personally about the experience of being polyamorous and being bisexual and some of those resources, and also some more about Brian's YouTube channel and stuff like that. So if you want to check that out, if you're a patron, you can already get that through your private RSS feed. Or if you're interested, go become a patron at patreon.com/multiamory. Also, to all of you listeners out there, we would love to hear your thoughts about this. What's your relationship with theology been? Did anything happen in this episode that blew your mind? Or do you just want a place to share how angry and pissed off you are that we even covered this topic at all? All of those, the best place to share your thoughts with other listeners is on this episode's discussion thread in our private Facebook group or Discord chat. You can get access to these groups and join our exclusive community by going to patreon.com/multiamory. In addition, you can share with us publicly on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. You can email us at info@multiamory.com, leave us a voicemail at 678-MULTI-05, or you can leave us a voice message on Facebook. Multiamory is created and produced by Dedeker Winston, Emily Matlack, and me, Jace Lindgren. Our episodes are edited by Mauricio Balvanera. Our social media wizard is Will McMillan. Our production assistants are Rachel Schenowork and Carson Collins. Our theme song is Forms I Know I Did by Josh and Anon from the Fractal Cave EP. The full transcript is available on this episode's page on multiamory.com.